Welcome to Infra and Dev Show. I am Mamoudou Bokoum, your host in this podcast dedicated to the challenges and opportunities of infrastructure development in Africa. This is our first interview in English in this podcast. It is in response to your request, my dearest audience. As you know, I am not a native English speaker. I apologize in advance for any mispronunciation. I am hopeful that the added value of introducing English in addition to French in this podcast will outweigh these minor linguistic errors. Today, we discuss the challenges of decarbonizing transportation in Africa with Elizabeth Drake, climate change desk lead at CPCS. The interview will be broadcast in two parts. In this 18th episode, Liz addresses the following key questions. Why does climate change matter? When it comes to CO2 emissions, how does the transport sector compare to other sectors? Which types of transports are responsible for the most emissions? What are the main approaches to consider for transport decarbonization? What are the main challenges for transport decarbonization in Africa? Our guest today, Elizabeth Drake, who we kindly call Liz, is a principal consultant at CPCS and she leads our climate change desk. An economist by training, she has more than 18 years of management consulting experience in the transport and infrastructure sectors in emerging and developed economies. She has been with CPCS since 2007, except for 2 years with the Federal Ministry of Transport in Canada. She has managed multiple assignments related to transport decarbonization, including assessment of policy and funding options for transition to electric vehicles. Hello, Liz. How are you?
Hi, Mamadou. Very well, thank you.
This is really the first episode we'll be doing in English. So far, this podcast has been run in French. So some people asked me if I could include some English episodes. So here we are. Happy to have you for this first episode in English.
Oh, thanks very much. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Maybe before we start, could you briefly present our climate change practice and its main missions that you are leading?
Sure. So I work at CPCS. We're a transport and infrastructure consulting company. We've been working in Africa and in other emerging markets and Canada, the US for sort of over 30 years. And our climate practice really came about organically through push and pull factors. Internally, we have a corporate environmental and social responsibility policies, which really pushed us in this direction, as well as many colleagues who want to make a difference in this space and care about climate change at a personal level. We were also seeing an increasing number of requests for support from our traditional clients in the sort of transport, energy, PPP, public-private partnership space for support in respect to climate change. So, ensuring we have the ability to provide these types of services to our clients was also really important to us. And the climate change practice has kind of three streams, you know, all of which are related. The first is around mitigating emissions, so reducing emissions, particularly carbon dioxide in the transport and energy sectors. The second area is around climate finance, which is really helping governments in emerging markets access climate finance and funding for climate-related projects, and also helping climate finance providers, sort of international funding agencies, identify opportunities, projects that they can support that meet their climate finance objectives. And then the third stream is really around climate change adaptation and resilience. So this is really about helping governments identify how to adapt their transportation and energy systems to live with climate change and its impacts. That's a bit of an overview.
Thank you, Liz. And before we jump in, our main topic, which is transport decarbonization. We still have some people that are skeptical when we talk about climate change. If you had something to say to those people, could you explain briefly why does climate change matter?
Sure. It still shocks me that there's some people out there that don't believe in climate change. But you know, climate change matters really. It's literally a question of life and death for our planet. I know that sounds a bit dramatic, but ultimately the world as we know it will be dramatically changed and not for the better if we don't address climate change. You know, we've all seen what rising temperatures are doing, warmer oceans, more droughts, rising sea levels, melting glaciers, you know, just more extreme events, sort of floods, wildfires. And, you know, those are having significant impacts. So it's not just that the climate's warming and, oh, whatever. It's that it has an impact on everybody. You know, changes agricultural patterns, water supply, energy systems. It affects health, people's health in terms of air pollution, illness from heat, you know, flooding of coastal areas and cities, it destroys habitats. You know, I could go on and on, but, you know, it's really important to pay attention to both the sort of reducing our emissions, but like I mentioned, also learning to live with the impacts, as it were.
Thank you. This was a good introduction. Maybe now we can jump in direct to our main topic, which is transport decarbonization. On that, when it comes to really CO2 emissions, how does the transport sector compare to other sectors? Which type of transport are really responsible for the most emissions or CO2 emissions?
Mm-hmm. You know, it varies by country, but the transport sector generally accounts for around 25% of global energy-related carbon dioxide emissions. You know, it has the highest reliance on fossil fuels of any economic sector globally. And what's even more notable is that these emissions are growing faster than any other end-use sector. So they grew by an average of just under 2% between 1990 and 2021. So, you know, that's concerning. Within the transportation sector itself, if you sort of break it down, I guess there's two aspects. The first to note is that, you know, most of the emissions come from the vehicles themselves. In the transportation sector, you have your fixed assets, you know, your airports, your port terminals, your railway stations, your highways, your roads. And each of those generate a certain amount of emissions, but the vast majority of emissions come from the vehicles and the vessels, you know, the trucks, the trains, the airplanes, the ships, etc. And when you think about the fleet, as it were, globally, road vehicles, so cars, trucks, motorcycles, account for about 70% of direct transport emissions. So, you know, almost three quarters are from road-based vehicles. Then the next sort of biggest sector is aviation, 12%. Shipping is 11%. Rail is very small. And the remainder is sort of 6%. So really, road vehicles account for the bulk of emissions. Maybe it's notable that on aviation, it's a very relatively small amount of movement. If you think of the freight that is moved by airplanes and the people that move by airplanes, it's a very small amount compared to, say, trucks and cars, but it still accounts for 12% of global emissions. So that's because aviation, and I mean, we can get into details if you're interested, but it's a very, very high emitting sector. Planes, simply put, they pollute a lot.
I see. But the road mode is really one that pulls most within the transport sector. But maybe continuing the discussion, we have seen a lot of donors, government really aiming to decarbonize the transport sector. What exactly they aim to do on that? I mean, what are the approaches they are thinking about when they target transport decarbonization?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I mean, the transport system is still overwhelmingly reliant on fossil fuels, you know, diesel, petrol, gas, jet fuel. And these fossil fuels are very energy dense and very efficient way to move vehicles and planes, et cetera, but they create greenhouse gases. So, you know, to be clear, greenhouse gases are naturally occurring, and the Earth's atmosphere can handle a sort of moderate amount through a natural cycle of heating and cooling. But the challenge is that we've dramatically increased the level of greenhouse gases being emitted over the past, you know, 100 years or so. So there's an imbalance which is contributing to climate change. So back to decarbonization, you know, when you burn these fossil fuels, you create a range of greenhouse gases. And carbon dioxide, or CO2, is the most common of these gases. So when people talk about decarbonizing transportation, what they mean is finding ways to remove carbon or diminish the amount of carbon that is emitted from a transportation system. And there's, you know, there's a range of approaches and technologies to do this at a very high level. A common framework that you hear people talk about in this transport decarbonization space is the avoid, shift, improve framework. And so by avoid, there are sort of different approaches to reduce emissions. Avoid is sort of avoiding unnecessary motorized trips. You know, a great example would be getting people to work from home. You know, so you're just not having that trip at all, or being more efficient, let's say, with moving your freight, filling up, making sure your truck is filled on the way there and on the way back, so that you're delivering more with the same amount of fuel. Shift in that framework of avoid, shift, improve. Shift means moving people or freight onto less carbon intensive modes. So moving from private vehicles to public transport, or walking or biking. And in the case of freight, it would be moving your goods by the lowest emitting modes, which are marine and rail, and, you know, away from, say, aviation and driving. And, you know, the ability to do that will vary for every, you know, very differently for every supply chain and sector. But that shift is just changing the way you move your products, like changing the technology that you use. And the last bit that we hear most about, really, when you read about transport decarbonization, is the improve bucket, and that's what we're talking about: redesigning and changing your fleet. So, you know, electric vehicles, hydrogen vehicles, and aircraft and vessels and things like that. It's about improving your vehicle design, improving the energy efficiency of the vehicle, and using clean energy sources.
Thank you, Liz. Avoid, shift, improve. This is, I think, a framework that most of the people will very easily understand. Now, let me bring this to Africa, because this podcast is really very focused on Africa. And we have been seeing most of the donors as well trying to support initiatives in Africa to decarbonize the transport sector. What do you think are the main challenges for transport decarbonization in Africa?
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe briefly breaking it down by subsector might help. If you think of air and long-distance marine shipping, for example, these are quite hard to abate sectors. By hard to abate means they're quite hard to reduce emissions right now, because they're still both heavily reliant on sort of jet fuel and diesel and bunker. But to be fair, the developments in both of those markets, aviation and long distance marine shipping, are going to be based on progress in global markets. You know, for both sectors, it's going to be around using probably greener fuels as a way forward to reduce emissions, as opposed to electrification. So in the African context, for probably both air and sort of long distance marine shipping, the challenges will be, you know, making sure there's adequate locations to store and supply these alternative sort of green fuels, like building out port terminals to be ready to supply these fuels. like green methanol, for example. In the rail sector, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's a low emitting sector, considering how much is moved by rail globally. Like, it's one of the most energy efficient modes and least carbon intensive. It's still very much diesel powered, particularly for freight. And you do see electrified passenger rail in Europe in particular. But it's very challenging in emerging markets, and particularly, I'd say so, in Africa. It's extremely expensive to implement, and you really need a dense network grouping of population over a long distance, and a sort of energy network that can provide electricity across the span of your passenger or freight rail system, for that matter. And that's very challenging in given the many the long distances involved in moving freight in Africa, and also energy access and reliability. In rail, you do hear people talking about battery powered as opposed to sort of electric lines, catenary lines for rail. You do hear about batteries in rail, but it's very challenging. I won't get into the weeds of it, but the opportunities for rail electrification right now in Africa are pretty limited. There's a lot more possibility in terms of road-based vehicles in Africa, like electrification of many types of road vehicles is really seen as the way forward for decarbonization globally. And there's the good news is that there's solutions now, like the technology exists now to electrify almost every type of road-based vehicle. So, certainly in the smaller segments, it's happening already, and it's happening in Africa. The sort of 2 to 3 wheelers or the motorcycles, and smaller cars, smaller trucks, and electric buses. These can technically be done and are being done in many markets. The challenge often, and particularly in Africa, is the, around economic considerations. The total cost of ownership for electric vehicles. That means if you consider the price of the vehicle, but also all the maintenance and operating costs and charging costs over the life of a vehicle, they're getting better and better, and in some cases on par or better than traditional internal combustion engine vehicles and diesel vehicles. But the challenge is the upfront cost is still higher for electric vehicles in almost every single market. There is a couple of exceptions where the governments have really put in place to discourage ICE or internal combustion engine vehicles. Anyway, so one of the challenges in Africa in particular is that higher upfront cost is a real deterrent for people to buy vehicles. Although again, it really varies by sub market, and happy to get into that more. There's also, if you think of sort of electrifying a whole system, which is where many countries in the West, quote unquote, the West are doing, you need massive investments in electrification. Just to give you an example, Canada has set targets for 2035 for all new vehicles sold must be zero emissions. But the government of Canada, to let that happen or to encourage that uptake, it's spending billions on electrifying, building out the charging infrastructure network. And not every government in the world has that money or the energy system in place, the sort of strong enough grid to build out that network.
I see. So if I hear you well, rail is a mode that is maybe less polluting, and the greatest opportunities, if you want to decarbonize the transport sector in Africa, might be on the road mode. This concludes the first part of this interview. We'll meet again in 2 weeks for the second and final part, still with our guest, Elizabeth Drake.
Le développement de l'Afrique passera inévitablement par le développement d'infrastructures qui favorisent une croissance économique durable et inclusive, une économie du bien-être. Ceci fait du développement des infrastructures une affaire pour tous, une affaire de tous. Merci beaucoup d'avoir écouté cet épisode du podcast Infrastructure et Développement. Ceci est un cadre d'échange pour vous. Partagez-le autour de vous et n'hésitez pas à nous laisser des commentaires pour nous faire part de votre appréciation et de vos suggestions d'amélioration. À très bientôt pour un